in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening to broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app in the TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted by daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB2MA. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. It's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's May 29th here in Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia at 8:13, and we're in freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, myself and Brother Richard, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-er. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Again, it's 8:18 here in the city of Philadelphia on Friday evening, the 29th of May, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. And before we do that, let me bring in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 79th Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm in my element, even though I'm in my home most of the time. Though the week has been the way it has been, I think if I'm not mistaken, please liberate me if I am. The stay-at-home order is still in effect.
Yeah, it is. At least until the end of next week, supposedly. We'll see. Mm. It's something I want to share, too, a little later on about the Black Doctors Consortium here in Philadelphia and something they had been doing for the past, been over a month now. Something the Dr. what's her name? Alfred. I think her name is Alfred that leads that consortium. I've been trying to reach her to get her on the program, too, but I know she's been busy. So her name is Sanford, Alma Sanford, to get her on the program to talk about what they've been doing. But eventually we'll get her on.
That'd be great.
She raised some concerns there that need to be discussed. I think you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, in fact, you've been mentioning on several programs, Richard, about the need for our people to develop some type of health health parameters, things like that.
Health policy, yeah.
Yeah, health policy. And she said some things that's very interesting in this article. I'll share them a little bit later in the program. Richard, we're in Freestyle Friday mode, but you know what's been on the minds of a lot of our people. And, you know, we see what's going on in Minnesota. Mm. That could be any city in America at any time. Because this stuff continually happens, and it's just going to keep happening until we do something about it.
That's a definite, and I think that this time is I wish this time is making us, besides what's been going on over the last 8, 9, 10 weeks, making us really, you know, consider that what we need to be doing. All ideals and all plans and suggestions need to be put on the table, but more importantly, we all need to be sitting around a table, discussing it, what's going on or what should we be doing next.
And, one of these horrific crimes come up every week, and it seems to take the other one off of the hot stove, so to speak, because before George Floyd got murdered, I think him and Breonna Taylor happened around the same time.
Right.
But it was a case before that. And to be honest, they happened so rapidly, Richard, I kind of forget the one that the public was talking about, or some of the conscious public was talking about, before these two cases popped up.
Ahmaud Arbery.
Listen, they happen so rapidly, man. It's every week.
Christian Cooper.
It don't stop.
I mean, it's and that's interesting. I'll just throw this out because this is what's on my mind as it's happening so quickly. It's two other things that mentioned in the opening about before that this series, the major thing was in the Black community, how much we were losing elderly people and the health status of Black people the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I mean, now that seemed to went out the, that's over. And I just find it interesting. That's over when at the same time they're saying, this whole thing that they get out to open up the state. Now they done had us locked down for 8 to 10 weeks. Now they say open up. And as soon as they say open up, before that, 40 million people apply for unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing. I don't help me out, Elliot. I don't understand how the shifts happen like this. I mean, these incidents are happening. So we can't deny that. But it just seems that all of them centered around, we as Black people are suffering the most. And this is another manifestation. I mean, Floyd's horrific visual, public hanging execution. It's happening, like right before our eyes. It's another manifestation of our public health as far as the being in a system of white supremacy and the condition that we're in. When it was Rona, it was because we were eating wrong foods, not getting the right foods, not having the right employment. And or we were having employment, but where we were employed, we were putting ourselves at risk of getting a virus that we would be taking home to our family, and there wasn't enough supplies to protect us. And that's those frontline workers. And then they would be losing their jobs because of the downturn of the economy being frontline. They seem to all interrelate to show our condition. And that's why I'm thinking that we need to be having this discussion.
Yep, certainly it all interrelates because it's part of a system of oppression, white supremacy, white hegemony, however you want to label it. It's all part of a system. You're right. And it all works. All these moving parts work together. You know, it's kind of funny watching how Europeans decide to try to think one step ahead of black folks. Now, before, when these incidents would happen in reference to police abuse or police murder against innocent people, unarmed, whether it's men or women or children, one of the first things they do, one of the things they would do, put it under review, mm-hmm. take the guy off the street.
Mm-hmm.
Black people started complaining that was basically like a paid vacation. They sit there and, you know, sometimes they review these things and put these guys right back out into the public. Once in a while, the guys would be prosecuted in reference to it. And I got my own opinions in reference to these so-called sham prosecutions. But now, if you notice, they immediately see in these cities, Richard, and you know this too, on some jobs in the private sector, the union and management are always on different sides of the fence.
Right.
But in these cities, towns, and everything else, the police unions and these city governments all work together.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is no the union and management. When you're talking about these FOPs and these police unions, they work hand in hand with city management. So now, this mayor here in Minneapolis immediately fires the guy that was kneeling on Floyd. Might have fired all four. I don't know.
Yeah, all four got fired.
He immediately fires him. Now, anybody that knows anything about these police unions, that's not going to fly. Number one, they didn't have due process. You fire these guys. Now, when they do come back for their hearings, 6 months, 8 months, a year, whatever, and just say they decide at that point, well, these guys are fired. Then after the due process, they are fired from that point. But what happens prior to when the mayor or whoever arbitrarily fires these guys? You know they're going to get back pay for all that period of time because they didn't get due process. You just immediately jump up and fire a employee, no matter what he did. See, these systems all work together. And then if that is the case, if these guys do get fired after they have their due process, then they'll only move to another state, another town, and get a job in law enforcement. Because these FOPs are going to take care of them. They're a brotherhood and a they're not a local union. They're a national brotherhood of slave catchers or police. And they work together. So, see that this guy has been fired. And then they decide to charge him with murder. The one that was kneeling on him and looking all, just enjoying the day. It didn't matter that he was killing a man. And then it was an Asian cop standing up there with his hands in his pocket. Like he was, just looking around. All four of the guys should have been charged with murder. They only charged one with murder. See, look, come on. We done seen this playbook. How many times are we going to keep going for this? We done seen this playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had an article here, Richard, and I want to play, because you sent me the police report. Now, I don't know. Where did you pick this up at, Richard?
It was posted
the report that was sent in by the police in reference to the incident.
Right.
I'm gonna read that on the air just in case some of our listening audience didn't see it. And also, I want to just share with them an article in reference to this. Now, you got this Joe Biden, who's not any different to me than Trump. One is just a little more overt and ignorant than the other, but they're both gatekeepers, or not gatekeepers, they're both involved heavily in white supremacy. That's part of them. That's their DNA. Mm-hmm. Now, he's vetting, although, you know, they can bring up all these names, Stacey Abrams, the senator out of California. They can bring up all these names they want. You know that he's going to choose a white woman. I was predicting that he would choose, what's her name, the tall?
Elizabeth Warren.
Warren, or this other one, Klobuchar. But he's supposed to have been sending out venting for Klobuchar, so it looks like she was going to be the one. Now, let me read this thing here. It mentions it from this published report yesterday in reference to Klobuchar. It says, Amy Klobuchar didn't prosecute officer at the center of George Floyd's death, left the case to her successor. May 28th, George Floyd's death in police custody is renewing criticism of Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat from Minnesota, prosecutorial record. Before she became a senator and a top contender for former Vice President Joe Biden's vice presidential spot, Klobuchar spent 8 years as Hennepin County attorney in charge of prosecution for Minneapolis. While in that position, Klobuchar declined to prosecute multiple police officers cited for excessive force and did not prosecute the officer who kneeled on Floyd's neck as he protested, The Guardian reports. The Minneapolis police officer, Derek Chauvin or whatever, saw at least 10 conduct complaints during his 19-year tenure before he was fired Tuesday, according to a database that documents complaints against police. In particular, he was involved in the shooting death of a man that was supposedly, involved in the shooting death of a man, other people said, before attacking a police officer, as well as some other undisclosed complaints. Klobuchar didn't prosecute Chauvin and other officers involved in the first death, which occurred in October 2006 while she was running for Senate. The case was under investigation when Klobuchar took office in the Senate in January 2007 and later went to a grand jury, which declined to charge the officers. Chauvin was later placed on leave when he and other officers shot and wounded another man in 2011. As the Washington Post noted in March, Klobuchar declined to bring charges in more than two dozen cases in which people were killed in encounters with police in Hennepin County when she was attorney. Instead, she aggressively prosecuted smaller offenses that has been criticized for her disproportionate effect on poor minority communities. As Klobuchar undergoes vetting to become a possible vice presidential candidate, that track record is being scrutinized and criticized once again. So we see here, Richard, that, I mean, that's what we were just talking about. She's part of a system. Mm-hmm. These people shot and killed, what is this thing, it says 12 people during the time she was in that state's attorney or county attorney office, and she didn't prosecute any of them. And this guy, Chauvin, was up on two charges where he had been doing this stuff prior to. And one, he was on desk duty. He was on desk duty during this grand jury. And then the other, he was on leave when he and two other officers shot a man in 2011. So this is a track record for this guy.
And the Asian one too, if my reading is right. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see anything about him. Although I wasn't really looking anything up in reference to him. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't surprise me.
No, so, it's you know, but it goes to that point you made about the code within the culture of the police department. And, you know, we say that that code and that culture goes back further than what we're seeing right now. When we say that this is a organization, a culture that was created out of slave catching culture, you know, whether that's urban legend for us, you know, or based in historical fact, this is what we operate and we see. So that means that what we see is these individual officers. That's not that the individual officers, the support for, in spite of what they do to us by individual officers, has a history that we say is resembling of what this country created that force for to do.
Exactly. It's working exactly as planned. Exactly how it was designed.
And I think, and that's why, you know, in this moment, when we put it in a broader context, that I'm looking for us to, because we can't keep identifying the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And do nothing about it.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like at some point, and I do hear people providing different solutions that they see, especially as it relates to the, you know, the offensive, what seems like of offensive, of private citizens, white, and public officers, police, as it is being, as it's being demonstrated on black folks. Well, I mean, this babe, you know, in the park, if for anybody looking at her, it did, you would think she was acting. And the guy couldn't have been no more non-intimidating.
I know it. You know, and he, you know, I didn't, I guess we could talk about him too, but he's another case. You got black folks and then you got pseudo black folks. Mm-hmm. You know, this man, listen, I'm not criticizing. The guy's Harvard educated. He's out in the park bird watching. I don't know if too many brothers that's a bird watcher. You know what I mean? In the park. You know what I mean? You might go on vacation and see some colorful birds, you know, but you're bird watching in Central Park and you're a brother. Now, this woman confronts him and he mentions something about her dog being off the leash. Right. She immediately goes over to him to take his camera or to shut it or to shut his phone off. So that's, you know, that white privilege is in white folks. That's how they interact with us. Some of our people don't get it. But in white folks' mind, in the back of their mind or in front of their mind, they believe that you are supposed to react the way they want you to react in any situation. And if you don't, then it's a problem. Mm. So yeah. When he didn't give up his phone and try to turn it off, she said, well, I'll fix you. I'll call the police and say that you were assaulting me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and then after she
did it, Richard, then she started putting distress in her voice.
Right, right. Because she was upset with the operator. Because like you didn't understand me right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You should have picked up. I'm saying this: an African American man threatening me and my dog, and you should have said, "I'll have somebody there right away." But she sounded like she was saying, I got to explain myself to you. You don't understand? There's an African. And she got frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Now, then, what they don't show in the video is that after she made that second plea, Richard, you know that she, for example, you might complain if somebody takes a wallet or whatever in the park, the police might get there an hour from now. But believe me, I'm quite sure the police were there within minutes of that incident.
Yeah, they didn't emphasize the response.
Yeah, but I'm quite sure that they were there. But this bird-watching brother was at least smart enough to leave that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because he might have been watching some birds if them cops would have came there and caught him with the camera. They wouldn't listen to anything he had to say. Immediately, he would have had some hickeys upside his head. He would have been arrested, and it might have been worse. See, that's why when his response to her, now she complained, because she was fired from her job, supposedly, She, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. You know, you listen to the same old spiel that they always do. Some of our people are fascinated when they hear white folks apologizing. But him, his response is, oh, I don't believe she was racist. I accept her apology. I don't believe she's racist. He don't know that woman. He don't know her from a can of paint. All he knows is when he was walking in the park and asked this woman to leash that mutt she had, she immediately called the police on him and said that he was threatening her. Now, if that's not racist, I don't know what is. Because that guy, under what's been going on now, that could very well have cost him his life. And he didn't value his life to the point where he don't think that what she did could have cost him his life. He didn't think it was racist. He's willing to apologize, forgive her. See, some of our folks, and they was willing to plaster that stuff all across the media. But it couldn't overshadow what was going on in the other cities where insurrection and all started happening in Minnesota and maybe a few other places. I'm not sure.
But, you know, Elliot, the thing that, you know, and looking at the white side of the chessboard, you know, another example, because it made me say, well, is something going on with white folks right now? Because in Minnesota, the guy who was in the, what's that, the workout area in the office complex?
Mm-hmm.
And the three or four young black guys come in who are in an office complex, and he calls the police. He's asking them, do they have a right to be there? And they're going to call. I'm speaking to the same point that you're raising about this utilization of the police department as an extension, as their not a bodyguard. But this is your enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you ain't going to answer me. You're not going to, like, what are you doing here? Like just because they don't have a right that they didn't. I didn't see anything said they posed any threat to this guy.
But just like I said, Richard, when they confront you, you are supposed to give them a civil answer. And if you don't, you're in trouble. That's the general white interaction with black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And black folks, they might want to deny it or to say it doesn't exist, but that's real.
And again, you know, looking from the black side of the chessboard, we cannot just continue to be reacting.
This
has to be some kind of more conservative, because we have too many things that we have to address. You know, I mean, white supremacy, this institution, this system of white supremacy is a given. We've been navigating that for 400 years. Now is the time to be able to navigate our own health and defense mechanism, and not for ourselves. What we need to be looking at, what is two generations from now going to look like? Because these children are watching. I heard a ball player who was a friend of Floyd, and he was, you know, he was saying his 6-year-old daughter had to comfort him, and the mother of Floyd didn't tell her 6-year-old daughter that he had been killed. What is the impact on that generation? Is us going out?
Richard, I'm glad you asked that question, because I know what the natural impact on somebody should be.
Right.
But, you know, it's a lot of factors involved where some of our people and a small percentage of our people won't react naturally. If somebody do something to you to hurt your family, your loved ones, anybody's natural reaction is self-defense.
Mm.
That's the natural reaction. Not let somebody come in your house, come in your ear and abuse your loved ones, abuse your wife, abuse your son, and you don't do anything or want to do anything. That's unnatural. Let me, Richard, I'm going to read that case that you sent me, that they initially filed in reference to this incident until it kind of blew up in their face. And it's kind of redacted at the top part. Right. I guess they're doing that for, you know, to protect certain names. But this is the report that was given on the 25th, the night of the day of the incident. On Monday evening, shortly after 8, officers from Minneapolis Police Department responded to the 3700 block of Chicago Avenue South on a report of a forgery in progress. Officers were advised that the subject was sitting on top of a blue car and appeared to be under the influence. Two officers arrived and located the suspect, a male believed to be in his 40s, in his car. He was ordered to step out of the car. After he got out, he physically resisted officers. Officers were able to get the suspect into handcuffs and noted he appeared to be suffering medical distress. Officers called for an ambulance. He was transported to Hennepin County Medical Center by the ambulance, where he died a short time later. At no time were weapons of any type used by anyone involved in this incident. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehensions have been called in to investigate the incident at the request of Minneapolis Police Department. No officers were injured in the incident. Body cameras were on and activated during the incident. The go number associated with the case is, and it has the case number down here. Now, I don't know what this incident describes, but it don't describe what I seen.
No.
But this is the report that went to their department in reference to that incident.
And the only way we would have known anything different is to the young heroine who stood and recorded what was going on. If she wouldn't have recorded it, that report would have been the report. Even though eyewitnesses was around, that would have been the report, because it would have not gotten it would have not gotten national, international attention because of the image. But because maybe you have seen it, Elliot, but have they shown the body cameras yet?
No. Now, it's another video also of the store owner that called. See, Richard, when I heard the report of the store owner, now, number one, I don't know the racial demographics in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I know in the whole state of Minnesota, it might be 10 blacks. I'm just being facetious. But most of your black population in Minnesota is in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They ain't in Green Bay. It might be 10 black people that live in Green Bay. That might be the next largest city in Minneapolis, in Minnesota. But, no, Green Bay is in Wisconsin. I'm sorry. Right. Minneapolis and St. Paul is the largest cities in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the racial demographics there.
It was 8%, 80-something percent on whites, 8% African-Americans.
8%?
It breaks down.
8%? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Now, the store owner called the cops on this man. Now, I just imagine that the store owner was not black.
No.
Now, I saw I'm channel surfing the other night, and CNN was on, and Don Lemon was interviewing. It looked like a white guy. He was sitting there with three black guys. One was sitting behind him and two on the side. And, you know, underneath it had the header about a store owner involved in George Floyd being arrested, or whatever. It had something in the header there, so it made me start listening. And I want you to check out what he said. And it's two black guys there, Richard. One has a kufi on. Now, this guy, he looks white, but evidently he's Arab.
Right,
Now, just listen to the interaction and what's said and what he really is concerned about. I think that's what we should focus on. Not necessarily what people say, whether it's Europeans or other nationalities. It's what they really mean, and more importantly, what they do. But let me try to cue this up because I want the listening audience to hear this guy. And the black guys didn't speak. Well, they didn't speak in this particular clip. They did say some words in reference because they were supposed to be his spokesman. Now, I don't know what Arab has a store and has black people as his spokesman, but he was doing that for a reason because he didn't want his store supposedly torn up.
Right.
But let me play this clip. If I can get this thing up here, right? One, two, three. Here we go.
Brothers and Jamar Nelson, who runs their media relations. I'm so glad that you guys are here. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So, Mike, as we saw what was happening there, these pictures of what's going on in this area, it's a terrible scene to watch. This whole tragic incident began after a staff member confronted George Floyd when he tried to use a counterfeit $20 bill. Can you give us more details about what happened?
After one of our staff identified the $20 bill was fake, Floyd was actually out of the establishment and outside. My staff called the police, doing a practice protocol, and when the police arrived, Floyd was still outside, and that's when they approached him.
So, Mike, you know, new video is out today. It appears to show Floyd didn't resist, and at least the video that we have seen. We're waiting now the body cam video. It has been released. We're seeing and is reviewing it now. But from the video that we saw, this surveillance video, didn't resist arrest, as the police described. You say that you have been asked by investigators not to release your surveillance video publicly, but have you been able to look at this surveillance video?
I did view it on Tuesday after the death of Floyd.
And?
And what I seen was devastating. It was very heartbreaking. And our condolences go to the family and friends of George Floyd.
Did you see resistance?
No.
On the videotape that you have, your surveillance video, you see no resistance from George Floyd.
Our camera angle shows exactly what was recorded as the outside bystander. What I seen was exactly what you seen.
You say there's been a backlash and threats against your family and the store. What do you want to say to people who are angry right now and they are lashing out? As I said, I understand the anger. I don't understand the actions of looting and destroying property. What do you want to say to people who are lashing out?
Although we have a village of supporters behind us, people that have known us for the 31 years that we've been there for, there's a small percentage of people that are angry and want answers, and we understand that. But let's take that anger towards the people that took the action against the individual that was, and let's take that anger and use it towards bridging and fixing the problem in our system that is causing minorities in this country to get killed, and now nothing is being done about it, and justice is not being served.
And Richard,
yeah.
And now you hear all the deflection. You want to put the focus on somebody else. Let's go back and look at some of the things that he states. Now, number one, he's in the community. He's not black. So they've been sucking money out of the community for a number of years, according to him.
Mm.
His name is something else, but he went under Mike on the television. Now, he said that one of his employees came back and told him that the man gave him a fake $20 bill.
Right.
Now, he was outside the establishment. He didn't run. He didn't take off. He was outside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been in stores, all types of stores, and so have the listening audience. Generally, if you give somebody a big bill, whether it's $20, $50, $100, they got the marker or they hold it up. And if you're in a store with goods, and they mark or hold it up and it's phony or fake, then you can't get the goods that you have on the counter.
Right.
So-and-so, this bill is no any good. It's not any good. The only thing that you'll end up having to do is probably put the goods back on the shelf. They might not do it, and they might. But then the person leaves. How do you go and tell the so-called Mike, the owner, This guy gave me a fake $20 bill, but he's sitting outside. He's standing right outside. And been, I get to, guess when he went out there, he must have just stood out there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Which raises that question, Elliot, because I didn't see in the, you know, the clips that I've seen, unless, you know, $20 don't get you much these days, right? Like, you know, you spend $20, it's like getting a pack of gum, right? You can put it in your pocket. But to the point you raised, it's not like he walked out with something.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever he had, whether he had a pack of cigarettes or whatever, or maybe he put the bag in the car. But all I'm saying is, how do you... He paid for his goods evidently with the money, and then leave the store, and then your employee says, oh, he gave me a fake $20 bill. And then he said, as practice protocol, we called the police.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you just go outside and say, I'm sorry, this bill is fraudulent. It's fake. And maybe the man will say, well, I didn't know that. Let me rectify it. You didn't give him it. The first thing you do is call the police. And then he said that the police asked him not to release the video.
Mm-hmm.
If he felt as though the community who he's a partner with all of a sudden, because he don't want his store busted up, he going to get a couple of black guys up there to be his spokesman. And I don't know what the hell is the matter with those two. I guess he figured, well, I'm a Muslim like you.
Right.
And because so they sitting up there with kufis on their head. Somebody need to smack the kufis off their head and maybe to get some sense. They sitting up there with him to protect him from the community because he's been, according to Don Lemon, he's been getting threats from the community. And you know what he's been getting threats for. Oh, don't blame me. Blame the police that did this. No, both of them's to blame. Why are you calling the cops on a man because he gave you supposedly a fake $20 bill that you should have caught while he was in the store even before he purchased goods? And then the police ask you not to release the video and you don't? Why don't we see the video? Oh, I saw it. It was horrible. Okay, why don't you release the video? What are they going to do to you, arrest you? They didn't take the video from him. They asked him not to release the video, and he said, yes, sir, I won't.
And you see, it makes sense if the report that they filed, and if they would have had the video, the store video, it would definitely been in contradiction.
Well, I'm telling
but
you.
That report, though, it, you know, all the things that was in there that was done, standing on top of the car, yeah, the series, it wouldn't even have been, it couldn't have, the video, like the young woman's the video that she took, wouldn't have, and again, now it was interesting that Lemon said that was that CNN does have the police video, but I don't think that they. I mean, maybe you've seen it, or maybe some of the Time for Awakening audience seen it, but I haven't seen yet anybody post clips of the police video cam. And when the mayor was asked that night, he hadn't even seen it.
Well, supposedly, yeah, that he hadn't seen it, yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, which that raises another, you know, like you said, his response, his and the police commissioner response, right, to this.
It was expected, you know, his response. I just don't understand how some of our people side, you know, some of our people, they, you know, what are you doing sitting up there with this guy? The only connection that they have with him is that I guess he's calling himself a Muslim all of a sudden. So you got these two brothers up there, and one of them got the kufi on. I guess the other one had to be a Muslim. He's the spokesman for this Arab because he don't want a backlash from the community. The people don't need to be patronizing this man anyway. You heard Brother Malik Shabazz on here last week. Our people need to stop going into these damn places. We got the power to shut some of these places down in our community, and some of us don't. We got the power to do something about these situations, and some of us don't. keep complaining to this man. He's not going to do anything about this brutality and murder against our people. If we don't do something about it, it's not going to get done.
Hmm. That is a fact. Yeah.
The go ahead. Finish. Go ahead.
I was looking, you know, and I seen this here, a report that came out last August, what new research says about race and police shooting. And there's just this one section, you know, that goes into it. It's a research part, the point that was done, according to this new study conducted by Frank Edwards of Rutgers University School of Criminal Justice and Hedwig Lee of Washington University and St. Louis Department of Sociology and Michael Epestio of the University of Michigan Institute of Social Research. The researchers used verified data on police killing from 2013 to 2018, compiled by the website Fatal Encounter, created by Nevada-based journalist D. Brian Bernhardt. Under their model, they found roughly 1 in 1,000 Black boys and men will be killed by police in their lifetime. For white boys and men, the rate is 39 out of 100,000. You hit it. 1 in 1,000 for Black boys and men, 39 out of 100,000. In fact, people of color in general were found more likely to be killed by police than their white counterpart. And this is, you know, the part one of the researchers said in a press release. Many people ask whether Black or white citizens are more likely to be shot and why. If you live in a county that has a lot of white people committing crimes, white people are more likely to be shot. If you live in a county that has a lot of Black people committing crimes, Black people are more likely to be shot. And again, if we use those numbers, 39 for whites, 39 out of 100,000 versus 1 out of 1,000. So this, you know, like, I don't know how people view this, but it does show that this is something that is disproportionately occurring amongst Black people. It is occurring, and I didn't see the numbers, but I'm going to go on a limb and say that a lot of those are by white officers, and that we have to address that, because those white officers are being supported by the Fraternal Order of Police in a political, not just the code, the blue code of silence, as that police report showed that you read, but at the political machinery of the Fraternal Order of Police, who are supporting that by making politicians at the council level, the mayor level, the state level, and the federal level be behind them. And I think that's what the point that you were making earlier about the power they had.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation too. But you know what? Before I go to the break, Richard, let me, I want to share with the listening audience this article. It was an article in the Detroit News that came out yesterday. And the title of the article, "We Have to Arm Ourselves, Black Michigan Demonstrators Protest Brutality." Let me read this, because you know what? One of these future shows coming up, I'm going to try to bring Phil Smith back on. You remember Phil Smith, the president of NAGA? National yeah. African American Gun Association, because right. at that time when we had him on, I think it was last year when he had first started,
right.
And he was talking about the response it was getting, thousands of people that was joining to learn how to use firearms, safely. You're not all this old junk you see on television where it's a gun. Mm-hmm. It's to learn how to use these weapons safely for self-preservation and protection. I just want to get kind of a overview now of what has happened with the organization. I'm going to reach out to him and get him on within the next, you know, within the mm-hmm. the month of June, because we're in the June. Hopefully in one of the June shows we'll have Brother Phil Smith back on, the president of National African American Gun Association. But let me read this article, Richard, before we go to break. May 28th is dated, the Detroit News. After a series of events where mostly white protesters carried guns at the Michigan Capitol and drew national attention, a group of armed black demonstrators hope Thursday to send their own message. I want to present myself as an adult black man, fully armed and not a danger, says Stephen Alexander, 46, of Lansing, who carried a pistol outside the Capitol building during the event. If you're not a danger to me, I'm not dangerous. It's as simple as that. Organized by the group Legally Armed in Detroit, the Thursday event drew about 50 people to Lansing in protest of brutality, including the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia in February and George Floyd's death while he was in police custody in Minnesota on Memorial Day. Among those in the crowd Thursday were individuals who were openly carrying firearms. Rick Ecton, 52, of Detroit, who helped organize the event, says that the nation is still dealing with the issue of hate. Ecton said that he hoped to bring together black and other minority individuals who share concerns about violence, especially racial violence. If you look at what's happening, you might want to take more of an active role in your personal protection and as a firearm instructor. Michael Lynn Jr. of Lansing carried a pistol during the event. We have to arm ourselves, said Lynn. We have to be okay coming together, exercising our Second Amendment rights, just like everybody else. We can't keep allowing murders to happen on these streets. In the last 5 weeks, three large protests were held at the Capitol against stay-at-home restrictions to prevent the spread of COVID-19. During them, some participants openly carried guns, which is legal and has drawn national spotlight. On April 30th, protests featured armed demonstrators inside the Capitol. Now, these are white. On April 30th, protests featured armed demonstrators inside the Capitol and some of them carrying guns in the gallery above the Senate floor, setting off a debate about whether to continue allowing guns in the building. Participants on Thursday's events, which featured speeches, said that their protest wasn't a response to the past demonstrations. However, there's a different perspective when it comes to black people with guns, says Alexander of Lansing, who served in the Marine Corps. Alexander said he wants to change the narrative. Black people don't exercise their rights the same way white people does, he says. There's a reason why we don't exercise our rights the same way, because we don't get the same response when we do it, Alexander says. For me, this is a moment where we are saying we know our rights, we believe we're equal, but we're going to put ourselves out front knowing we won't get the approach in the same way. So, Richard, this group, they call themselves Legally Armed in Detroit. Maybe I'll try to reach out and get one of these guys to come on the program. Legally Armed in Detroit says that, you know, they're about trying to teach, because one of the guys is a firearm instructor, about how to properly use firearms for protection. They're tired of this stuff going on in the community. He might be a member of NAGA. That's why I want to get Brother Smith on and mm-hmm. to kind of talk about the organization again and get more support.
And I like, when we come back, I like to just also raise a context for this, because I think it's important in the moment we are, as I see it, just get your view about that. How do we approach this individual, our increase in individual gun usage and executing that right to firearm in this environment? Because it's a mechanism, I think, that we also need to consider to be demonstrate, you know, so that to be as a defensive mechanism for that.
Yeah, well, listen, things is happening at a rapid pace, Richard. And if our people really look in perspective over the past couple of years, maybe 3 or 4 years, things have been happening at a rapid pace. And I believe it's definitely for a reason. And it's a wake up. It should be a wake up call to our folks. I got a cut here that I'm going to play while we're on break. And it's interesting. Listen to the words, Richard, that might kind of formulate some thoughts in your mind when we come back from break. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation here on Freestyle Friday by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi, the only word you need to know to join your global Kometu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Take it easy, brother. Brother X on the line.
Oh, thank you, my good brother. Brother, I admire your knowledge and courage, and we might not always be on the same page, but we are definitely in the same book. Do you listen to an internet show come out of Philly called Time for Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard?
No, I haven't heard of that. It's good?
Time for Awakening, man. It's a great show. But anyway, in between they breaks, man, They play clips from many of our black leaders of the past, Malcolm X, and they play Rosa Parks. Anyway, Dr. King, they play these clips. And I would hope that maybe the station would think about doing that sometime instead of some of this music. They even got a clip of Fannie Lou Hamer when she was beat about two black guys in the jail. She was beat with phone books.
Yeah, yeah. I played that clip myself trying to get people to come out to vote and see what people sacrifice.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. And a lot of our people haven't heard these people talk. And it would be good to hear that.
Then I have an obligation to tell the truth. Let it transcend generations. Release the frustration of these cameras that watch. Fight time constraints of these Gregorian clocks. Face fears that's embedded by the media. Fix fools, right or wrong, it's like a genius. Been needing this for so damn long. You about to get it, everybody ain't gonna listen. Even make the effort. You've been looking for a savior or a shepherd instead of heeding the message that the ancestors left. After unlearning what you have learned from those concerned with preventing your evolution, the insatiable desire to know self will dissolve illusion after illusion, illuminating deception and darkening perception. Red pill ingestion, skill set perfection. Power begins at the level of conception, so we conceive of new relations, new villages and new nations. Dismissing traps and bridging gaps from conception to creation. In the absence of belief, there lies knowledge. Applied knowledge plus time equals wisdom. Forming new paradigms from old systems. Ancient values, future vision. Decode the message in this transmission and use it as your ammunition. Because whether or not you make it is strictly your decision. Should you choose to accept this as your mission.
People keep waiting for something to come down from the sky to bring their freedom, help them see themselves in a better light. But it don't work that way, my friend. Hoping for change is all present. When what we need is to transcend, the path to freedom lies within. So ain't no sense in trying to make it, cause everybody's not gonna make it. You want your freedom, you gotta take it.
Everybody's not
we
gonna
need that red, it. That black, that green for liberation. Freedom's not free, freedom is taken.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:18 in the city of Philadelphia on a Freestyle Friday mode on Time for an Awakening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard.
Yes, yeah.
Those brothers said, all you can do is put it out there. Everybody's not going to make it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you got a point.
Oh yeah. And that's, you know, it speaks to, you know, what you were speaking to before the break as far as the whole question of self-defense and, you know, what they also said about, you know, freedom lies within.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems that we have to now, as you also said about things moving fast. This is, if we have to be able to see that the self-governing aspect is the most important thing that we should be engaged in at this point in time. Now, I know that's just a term, self-governing, right? But the part of And I notice in out of these instances and people talking about defense and looking at the need for even having, you know, individual being able to successfully utilize the First Amendment or the Second Amendment and the whole thing of guns. But if we're not in this environment, with this, because we realize, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, just because the law is out there don't mean that we get to operate that law like it was meant for us. I think that that would be foolish. So the thing is that we need to have self-defense, but in the context of self-governance, and we need to look at Tulsa, Oklahoma. We need to look at, in South Carolina? You know, where these, when we created self-governance and how whites, whatever it is, being white, whether it was jealousy out of their own mental illness or whatever, decided that that was enough and we didn't have the mechanisms of defense. Compared to, say, and you bring up all the time, where the deacons of defense, they were the protective mechanism for the civil rights era in the South. I mean, those men, they had a governance mechanism. And I'm just saying, Elliot, that we need to make sure that we are creating a process where we are governing, but not just governing in the sense that if we do the right thing, a whole governance of our social order should be around the defense, because it's obvious that we are open cannon fire and cannot even defend ourselves in a public image. They create an image of us being, and then come back and say, well, y'all kill each other. So that makes it justifiable. And until we govern ourselves, and say what's the right social behavior, what's the right cultural behavior as it relates to, and the brother brought up in there, this new relation, right? Because we need to have a new relation to where we're constantly have a order, not just pushing about peace, but pushing about being in the process of constant self-defense. That's what I say. And if we're just individuals with guns, they can pick us off and make us the victim, the villain. And, which they say now, we think you had a gun, you didn't have one. The brother that was in a car with his wife and child had a license to have a gun. Didn't they kill him?
Yeah. You talking about Philando Castile?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the thing is that we have to be, what I'm advocating, Elliot, that as you say, and things moving fast and things changing, and the public health crisis that we, this supposedly virus has demonstrated within our community, we have to govern ourselves differently. And when we say govern, we're not talking about govern ourselves in the Democrat or the Republican Party. We're not talking about having just putting people in place to govern the county or the state or the federal positions of office. We need to be able to have a mechanism, a social, political, and economic mechanism of self-governance that in the way we relate to each other, it's a defense mechanism for anyone who wished to harm us, which I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, I don't believe we have that right now. We have people who can come in our communities and open up shop and take whatever little dollars we have, take it away from us. We have situations of people who can come in into our educational institutions, into the public educational institutions where we greatly reside, our children reside, and put poison in their minds by even the absence of what is they need to know in order to be self-actuating individuals.
We're because we don't have any defense mechanism. These things are being done. These viruses are attacking us, and we're dying from it. So I just think that it's important to look at defense from our new relations with each other from a perspective of self-governance.
The power is in our hands, Richard. I think what's stopping us is fear. And when I say us, I'm talking about a great number of our people is fear. Always like that parable that Cynthia McKinney drew when she talked about and used the clip of Roots on this program when she talked about dozens of people just standing there watching.
Mm-hmm.
They might not have wanted to. I know they didn't want to see Kunta get beat, but they didn't do anything about it.
Right.
And you had one that was beating him. And one thought that he was in with the master trying to curry favor, so he tried to intervene in his behalf. But it was dozens that were standing there watching.
Mm-hmm.
See, we can't afford that moving forward. We can't afford to have fools among our people. These people firing guns in the community, selling dope and all that stuff. Our people's mind need to be clear moving forward. No more of this old foggy smoking, snorting and all this other stuff, which leads to a lot of old senseless violence. We can't afford to have fools among our race. That was a line in the Soldier Story. We can't afford to have fools among our race anymore. We need to start ostracizing ourselves from these people. I don't care whether they're your husbands, your brothers, your cousins, your sisters. We need to start. If they don't listen to reason, we need to start ostracizing ourselves and separating ourselves from these fools. They're a hindrance to us. They're bringing us down.
This man can't
wait to put them back into chattel slavery again. That's why these slave catchers is out here. They can't wait to come in our community and see the ones that's acting irrationally so they can put them in slavery. If some of our people don't want to change, we're going to have to start ostracizing ourselves from these people. That might be a hard thing to say. It might be tough. They're in our families. But this is real. This is real talk. What you going to do, keep siding with this foolishness? We can't afford this anymore. This man's gunning us down, and then some ignorant black folks among us doing the same damn thing. We got to do something about this, people, and we can do something about it. Our ancestors believed that they were the children of the Most High. You could see it by the way they interacted. You could see it in their writings. You could see the respect they had for the higher powers. You could see it. If that's the case, then why don't we, just like it said in that clip that I was playing, we keep waiting for something, waiting for a savior, when the knowledge is within us.
Mm-hmm.
We've been given that power. Just like as a parent, you teach your children so they can make solid decisions on their own. You're not going to always be there for them. You teach them to make solid and rational and sensible decisions for not only for them, for their families, and hopefully the people. So if that's the case, if we're the children of the Most High, then what the hell has he been teaching us? He has sent prophets over the years, and I'm not talking about no Peter and Paul and all these people that may or may not have existed. In some cases, it's no evidence that they did. But we got prophets that have been among our people, giving our people messages, clear messages to change our behavior, to do better for ourselves. We had a sister on here 2 months ago. Sister Ava Muhammad was talking about separation or else. And going around the churches, temples, mosques, whoever wanted to hear her, preach this message. There's been a lot of people on here with the past. What's the ambassador from the continent saying almost the same message? Everybody that we brought on here that's been talking about our people unifying. You had a message last week from Malik Zulu Shabazz, almost the same thing. We got the power to do something about this.
And that's all about us not being, as you say, not being afraid to govern ourselves. You know, is all about that. And the mechanism that we have to do, even as you say, in our own family, we have to be able to win the hearts and minds of our people to do just that.
And sometimes you ain't going to do that, Richard, until the people, some of our people, it's a show me type of thing. They want to see what you're doing because they ain't doing a damn thing. So they want to see what you going to do. Then we got to start doing it. We have to.
Right.
And it's people doing it. But you got the media, and this man, he's going to always put up some Uncle Toms and Thomas and Aunt Thomasinas to muddy the waters. To act like you're not doing anything. I just saw on the television the other day, I forgot this, what city it was in. No, in fact, it was either he or Camden. One of the lawmakers there, the white lawmaker, had all these black pastors all around him condemning what was going on in Minneapolis, saying that that's not the right way to go. Violence is not right. Answering this with violence is not the right way. I don't know whether you saw it, Richard.
No, I didn't.
But he had about 10 pastors on. One of the callers might have saw it. They can call up if they choose to at 215-490-9832. You know, come on. These people are on speed dial. So when things happen, whether it's some of these black misleadership class, these pastors, whatever, they on speed dial for these people. Soon as something happened, get out there. Your people's acting up. You earn your money. And they're more than happy to get out of here.
Mm.
Let's bring a couple calls in. Let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
Hey, sir. What's going on?
Hi, Brother Richard. How you doing, good brother?
All right, now.
Praise be to Allah. Brother Elliot, let me say first, on what you just said, Elliot, you're right. I was watching that racist Fox News. You know, they always say... balanced and fair. I always say unfair and unbalanced. Just like you said, they had this Negro on last night, David Webb. Hannity went, it was Tucker Carlson when he got that Negro and said, look at the people and stuff like that. They out here rioting, they destroying their own communities and stuff like that. And he's such a house Negro, David Webb, to be some kind of conservative black talk show host. Now, when they were showing a clip, they actually were showing white people come out of the stores with TVs or products and stuff like that. But all that bigot Tucker Carlson was pointing out, well, see, that's what they do. They destroy these communities in these urban areas. I'm saying to myself, urban? I'm saying, look at all these white folks coming out here out of Target stealing everything with some of them black people. And this nigga, yeah, you're right, Tucker. Yeah, you know, we as African Americans, we upset about what happened, you know, but this is not the way to go. I said, Negro, shut up. I said, sick you, handkerchief head, pork chop eating Negro. I said, you guys going to totally ignore all these images of these white people coming out there and go act like black people are the only ones come out of them places with TVs and thing else. They show the damn white woman coming out of a whole handful of stuff, Richard. I said, man, please, man, come on, that foolishness, man.
as we said earlier, I mean, 40 million people, it ain't 40 million black people have fallen for unemployment. And what we seen with rifles was white folks standing at the state capitol.
Exactly, Richard.
Saying, I want to go back to work.
Exactly. And Richard, I've been to Minnesota. I've been to the Twin Cities back in 98 when Randall Cunningham, my man Randall, played for the Vikings. I went up there to St. Paul. I stayed like 3 nights up in the Twin Cities. I was in St. Paul, it's Minneapolis. You know, the lakes, you know, like Ellis says, so you go from Camden to Philadelphia. The lakes divide the two cities. And it's not that many black folks up there. You know, they have a small black population up there in Minnesota and Minneapolis and St. Paul. We have a lot of large black population up there. But, you know, it's the old saying, Ellen Richard, they say sometimes life imitates art. And it's not funny, but it gives you a parable on how when you think things change, you realize how much they remain the same. I'm sure Brother Richard and you and Brother Elliot and the Thompson, we can listen on this. Y'all over the years have watched Sanford and Son, right? With Red Fox and Demon Wilson and them. And ironically, they showed this clip just because they showed his little marathons a lot of times on the weekend. They showed it just about a week ago where they had the segment with Fred. And this, remember, this was made back in like 71, 72, this particular episode. And they showed Fred where he was having one of them heart troubles, so-called fake heart attacks. So the brother came over and said, well, Mr. Sanford, you know, you need to get your heart checked, you know, because heart disease is the number one killer of black men in America. And Fred said, well, that's funny. I thought it was the police. and this was made back in 71 or 72. I mean, so it just lets you know, man, that even, you know, from Hollywood, they know the dynamics of what's going on with these racist, white, bigoted cops killing black men. It's like Brother Moore always say, cops stand for cops on patrol. These white bastards, they feel as though a black man or woman has no rights that they bound to respect. That's why they think they can just kill you with humanity and kill you and get away with it. Matter of fact, my mom and dad, my father, God rest his soul, that's how my mom met back in late 50s because of court at the Congress of Racial Equality was having a meeting. This happened down in North Philadelphia back in 1955, 56, I think it was, where a young brother, he was a numbers writer, and the cops had raided the place and he ran. He had no weapon. He was just running out of fear because I guess he didn't want to get arrested. He was running. This white cop got right down his knees. This is in 56 at night in North Philadelphia, 16th and Dauphin. This bastard got on his knees and fired two shots and killed his brother. His name was Jimmy something. Shot him in his back. Well, I want to ask you and Richard, Elliot, how many days in jail you think this white cop served? Take a guess.
No,
exactly. And the system as it does now, in many cases, they really justifiable homicide. Even though this brother was posing no threat, he wasn't trying to fight the officers. He was just running out of fear. He wasn't trying to get it done. He was just trying to get away from the scene. And they said it was justifiable homicide. So we see clearly these bastards have been doing this stuff for years, and that's why that's why we have got to put it in. Because like you said, Ellie, they're not going to put an end to it. This man, we're going to have to put an end to it. And that's why it's important that we stand together and do what we have to do. And let me say this, Ellie, Richard. I got a little teary-eyed tonight when I was watching the brother's last minutes and stuff on this earth, Brother George Floyd, because, you know, his mother, she passed away, I guess, a few years ago. I think if I heard it correctly. And as he was getting the life choked out of him, he cried out for his mother. That got to me, man. My mother fortunately still living, and my father's deceased now. But it just got to me when they said that, man. I said, wow, you know, he cried out for his mother. I mean, you know, that's just a love that a black man has for his mother. I mean, he cried out for his mother. I said, wow. He got my tears water in my eyes when I heard that tonight. I said, wow, you know, this is no good white piece of you know what, just do that to another human being. But you what even assists me even a lot more, Ellen Richard, was our former U.S. Attorney General. No, I'm talking about Loretta Lynch, who I'm sure y'all familiar with.
Good.
Was the Attorney General under Barack Obama. It's amazing, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and to the top of the wicked list, Lord, how these Negroes, they get so talkative, they become so black once they leave office. I'm going to deal with her first and Kamala second. Man, when I heard Loretta Lynch on the night, she was in there with Joy Reid on MSNBC. Brother Elliot, if I didn't know no better, and Brother Richard, I would have thought that Loretta Lynch became Harriet Tubman. She was talking big shit tonight. I'm saying to myself, I'm like saying, well, sister, why do you talk all that stuff when you was in off? When you was in office, you was a real handkerchief head. When these police was out there killing out people, you didn't do a damn thing. Matter of fact, a lot of times you even made excuses for these police and stuff, and was blaming the community. Y'all remember those times, Ellen Richard?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, they was in office when Tamir Rice and the young man in Florida got killed.
Exactly.
Several of them.
Exactly. Well, Loretta was on there tonight talking about something. She told Steve Joy, you know, black and brown people, they getting tired of this. She said, what you see out in the streets of Minneapolis and San Jose and all these cities across America, he's looking at black anger because black people are getting tired of being gunned down. I'm like saying, what the hell? I said, why the hell wouldn't you say all that stuff when you was in office, woman? You would have carried more weight back then. Saying, yeah, because it's a history of these white police officers interacting with black men and their results follow. I mean, she was talking, oh, that makes him Loretta, my sister. Why didn't you say all that stuff when you was in office, man? I mean, come on now. You know, all these Negroes killed when they get out of office. They just want to talk so tough all of a sudden, you know? And same thing with Kamala. She was discriminating the police on how racist they were. was. And she said basically what Loretta said. Kamala was saying the same thing, that the black people around the country, they fed up with being killed and nothing being done with these policemen killing our people. I'm like saying again, Kamala, when you was out there in California, you should have been dealing with those kind of things. You should have been going after these racist cops out in California. It's just amazing, Brother Ellen Richard, when our people, when some of they step out of office, they become all of a sudden militant all of a sudden, you know?
Well,
because they ain't got to deal with that FOP union. That's why.
Yeah, you're right, Brother Richard. You're absolutely right, Brother. So it's easy to talk tough now. You hold no public office, so they really can't come after you. You're a private citizen at this point, so you can talk real tough. I mean, I really wish Brother Elliot and Richard and the time for Wigan listen, I wish y'all can go back and get some clips from MSNBC. If you guys know somebody can get that for y'all, y'all can go to the computer and pull up Loretta and Kamala. They was both talking tough. I said, but I didn't know no better. I thought they was militant sisters the way they was talking so tough tonight. I said, man. I said, I wish y'all would have been saying that stuff back years ago when y'all was in office, you know. But again, it just points out, like you said, Ellie, and I close with this so some of us could get on. It's just this stuff that's got to stop, man. These cops, like I said, they're just killing out, like Brother X always say. These people, they think they setting our people up for extermination. We're not going to let it happen. I would like to think, by the grace of our Lord, we ain't going to let it happen. But ain't no doubt, they killing us right on camera. Because think about this, Ellen Richard. This devil that was sitting on top of Brother George Floyd, he knew he was being filmed. Mm-hmm. He knew the people had their cameras. He didn't give a shit. He was sitting there with his hands in his pocket, with his knee constantly pressing even harder on Brother George's throat and stuff. And he just didn't care. I mean, he was like, hey, you know. And like you said, you look at his record. This man should have been off the police department years ago. If he would have been taken off the police department years ago, Brother George may be still alive today. I mean, this bastard with his record, with his brutality record, he had, what, a 20 complaints or whatever. He should have been off the police department. And you see this pattern, Ellen Richard, in the Time for the Wickedness orders. Don't miss this. They let these white racist thug cops, they're on the police departments all over the country when they have a record of brutalizing black. We've seen, I give you two examples, and I'm gone, Ellen Richard. Here in Philadelphia, that devil that killed David Jones, when we shot him in the back, Elliot, a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
He should have been off the force because 2 years prior to that, he shot another black man in the back and paralyzed him. But he was an unarmed black man, just like he did David Jones, shot him in the back, and he was allowed to stay on the force. Remember the cop several years prior, Elliot, that killed our dear brother Dante Dawson, shot him in the head and stuff when he was handcuffed and everything? Same with him. A year or two prior, he participated in the chokehold that resulted in the death of our Puerto Rican brother, Moses de Jesus, and the Puerto Rican community was outraged. Again, had that bastard been taken off the police department, maybe Dante Dawson would be alive today. See, when these cops, when they brutalize people and stuff, they allow these bastards to stay on the police departments over again. And like you said, and that's one thing Loretta Lynch said I agree with. These police is, man, they got so much power in this country, man. People don't know. They when they say fraternity, they mean it because they all click together. Whether it's the national FOP, they all link up with the local FOPs in these cities around the country. And these cops, they got carte blanche to go out there.
Yeah, but they not only link up with the other FOPs, they link up with these municipalities, these city governments, these national governments.
Question.
They're all
no
in
question.
Cahoots. I just read that thing about Klobuchar. She never prosecuted any of these cops up here in Minnesota.
They mixed that tonight. They mixed it tonight. They said that she had a chance to prosecute this bastard that killed Brother Floyd. She had a chance to prosecute him back years ago, and she didn't do it.
Yeah, well, what is that going to be with some of these black electors, including Kamala Harris or the one you're talking about, Lynch? They're going to be out there, especially if this old racist clown Biden chooses her as his running mate. They're going to be out mm-hmm. there touting her to the black community
that's on the
ticket. So these people ain't nothing but charlatans. And the biggest one, you ain't heard Obama say nothing about this. Or his wife.
Oh, his wife. That's it. But she can get up there and chastise black people.
For not voting. I give a damn about some voting. What about this stuff going on?
Losing. With the LA,
no, sorry. No. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say, you might have to chastise black folks saying they're the cause of Hillary won in 2016. Never mind the fact that 75% of white women voted for Donald Trump. But that's so she's gonna ignore that and say, oh, it's black people's fault. You know, and they're doing the same thing right now. The last point, they're setting up the black community to be criticized again. So when Biden loses to Trump in November, if he loses, they're not gonna blame white racism and white women and white men. They're gonna blame black people again. I don't care if black people come out 95%, 96% strong for Biden in November. They're gonna still say, oh, it's black people's fault. If these Negroes would have just got off their behind and came and voted, Biden would have won, and we wouldn't have 4 more years of Donald the Nazi Trump. Oh, I can just hurt them now. They just ready to just blame it on black folks. White folks escape. It's just amazing, man. Black folks blame for everything, man. I mean, it's just, I tell you, it's just crazy. But anyway, brother, Richard, thank you for your time, man. And like I said, man, if y'all hear that clip, man, when they said that he uttered the words for his mother, man, while he was being the life choked at him, man. If that don't get to somebody as a human being, nothing else will, man. The man cried out for his mother. He said, what a black man has the love for his mother, man. Wow. That was just too much to even bear tonight, man. You know. But anyway, brother, y'all good show, brothers. I'm going to sit back here and, you know, I'm gonna put me on mute, brother Elliot. I'm going to sit back and check out the rest of the show. Peace, Elliot and Richard.
Talk to you.
I know.
All right.
You know, Elliot, I want to, one thing that I always bring up and when I have the opportunity to infuse this, because when we're moving to this point of self-governance, we have to have a mechanism. And, you know, the Malcolm X at grassroots organization, which, you know, or, you know, what's that, Brother Akua in Mississippi? You know, I really believe that we need to be forming these people assemblies, because we need to be able to put policies in these to exert what we need, what we see in the political process, whether it be accepted or not is one thing. But we right now, it sounds like we're waiting on them to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting on a politician to do the right thing. We're waiting on, you know, all these people who are sitting, who we're seeing not doing the right thing. But where's the mechanism? We know the FOP is the linchpin to the political and military strength, because they get federal dollars. They get federal equipment. You know, and it filters through those, that union that gives those officers the courage to feel that they can do it. But what mechanism do we have to, you know, and I ain't talking about voting on a one person to get in office. I'm talking about being able to say we're governed. This is not going to happen. And we know you is not going to be here. Or y'all have no impact on what we're doing in here. And you're not coming in here and just doing what you want to do.
The first time we received Home Chef, I asked.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bridget. Finish your thought.
That's what I'm, you know, just that mechanism of a people assembly is where we can create the governing process. Because I don't think we have that. We're dependent on the party process. The Democratic Party is supposed to do. Is Biden, did anybody hear that Biden has anything or mentioned anything to deal with the police, you know, as we've been talking about for years in his campaign as of right now? With all of this here, and do anybody have anybody, does he have even any of the sidekicks that he's suggesting, is any of them advocating for the what is going on with the police in relationship to our community, and what policy initiative that they're going to push to deal with it?
And he's not. But he's no different than any of his predecessors. Whether you're talking about Trump, whether you're talking about Obama, whether you're talking about Bush, they all armed the police. And during the Obama administration, the police got all types of special weaponry that they didn't have prior to.
And I think they passed a law to protecting what they call it, the blue law of protection for the police that he signed. Exactly. Well,
come on.
But the thing is, what did we put in place? Because we're reacting now. Mm-hmm. All those people in the streets right now, they're reacting. I mean, it's a good demonstration. But then after, the week after, we still got this
public health crisis that's multidimensional. And how are we demonstrating any self-governance, and how are we putting in place? And as you say, there's people who are, Brother Shabazz came forward, you know, the brother you're saying that has the gun club. All of these are mechanisms that need to be put in place within our governance mechanism. But if we don't have a governance mechanism, then we're saying we're relying on somebody else to govern us. And those people who are governing us say they do not care.
And they've been saying it for centuries, too. Let's go to New York City. 646.
Hey, what's going on, Richard and Elliot? Hey, to my good brother, Little Joe. Little Joe, you know you like a good cry every now and then. Ain't nothing wrong with that, brother. Hey, listen. Look, let me say this. We had a point in time in our history where we just gonna have to take some responsibility and be warriors. You know, it's too many weak Negroes out here, man, that, you know, go on TV and cry. You know, man, it's dishonest and it's disrespectful to our children. Anytime you a man that got an infant and a teenage daughter and another man's daughter that you raising, and you go on TV and start crying about fratricide against your people and your unwillingness to stand up and do what you have to do, you need your ass whipped. It's that plain and simple. Or just don't say nothing. You know, you could go on TV and articulate that you feel bad and you feel this and that, but to cry, nah, man, men don't behave like that. And damn sure warriors don't behave like that. So don't do it. It's not respectful to your wife, damn sure not to your daughter, and it's disrespecting my children. And it's definitely infuriating me, and I don't give a damn who you are. You just don't act and behave like that. You know, it's like that Rodney King and his nonsense, can we just all get along? Sometimes we can't just all get along. It's just like I heard a beautiful thing today from a so-called ally talking about let them burn down my store. But you see, I know better because I'm a homeowner. I'm a business owner in regards to my properties. I always put extra insurance on my stuff because I want to be protected, just like she protected. She know if her store burned down, if she got insurance or not. And she also know because of the statement that she made, they'll go out there and set up a GoFund for her ass and she'll get more money than what the store is worth because it done already happened.
Jay, and in this moment, where money was passed out because businesses for the last 2 months hadn't had any business, but you say makes sense because, like, why wait for customers to come back if I can get the insurance money to build it back up so customers can come back?
And know that I've tried to show myself to be an ally and know how people will set up a GoFund. For you, you're not fooling me, man. I know the game. It's an old, no good, filthy Jew told me when I first got into dealing in real estate. He said, young man, let me tell you something. You get you good tenants and a lot of insurance. So in case something go wrong, you just make sure that you have money to fall back on and regroup. Or just say the hell with it and walk away. And you know something? I must agree with him. Because that's one thing I will pay extra is in for insurance. And you know the funny thing is, people don't know the importance of insurance. And I didn't know it until recently. Your boy Bill Cosby, who's on biz, railroaded, even though he's responsible for some of it, done been sued left and right. Do you know that man ain't lose none of his wealth because of the simple fact of his homeowner's insurance? Do you know that he was fighting with the insurance company who paid off a whole bunch of women that he didn't want to pay off? You know, but people don't know about that because most people don't do the necessary investigation. You know, they don't look at the fine print. They never get a lawyer to look over and make sure that their insurance is right. That's why, unfortunately, a lot of people are not going to get insurance for certain tragedies that go on, like Sandy Hook and all of that stuff, because their insurance wasn't right. And let me tell you something. Insurance companies don't like paying off, man. They'll fight you tooth and nail and not pay you off, and then they'll tell you, F you, take me to arbitration, because they know they got the arbitration on that. But, you know, that's business. You got to learn. I mean, you know, or listen, two things in the game of life. You got to learn from your mistakes, or you got to listen not to make certain mistakes. And that's just the reality. Now, let's move forward. In regards to what's going on with this whole tragedy, this is a perfect opportunity for Fredo to bust some Negro's head. But the only reason he ain't gone into Minneapolis and bust some heads, because you got too many damn Yorugos in the crowd. Now, he don't want to beat up on no Yorugos. And there's more Yorugos, unfortunately, than blacks out there protesting. Because, you know, they got a reason to protest for George Floyd. He had him a white woman. So that makes him seem like an ally. Now, you know me, I mean, I always get in trouble because I'm just going to say it. I don't give a damn about the Negro now that I know he got a white woman. So, I mean, I don't even care no more. It's not my issue. But the point of the matter is, we got to look at what's going on. They in Atlanta now acting a fool. They messing with CNN. You know, they in New York acting a fool. Hey, listen, man, if we got to act a fool, we got to be justified in what we acting a fool for. We got to be organized to act a fool and act in a fashion to where you're going to get some sort of result for acting a fool. Because you know what the reality is? When it's all said and done, a lot of black people going to be hurt. Floyd's family going to get some money. Benjamin, the ambulance chaser, Crump and his partner, they're going to get some money. And there ain't going to be no damn justice. Because the one thing the ambulance chasing lawyers will never do is take it to trial to expose the wickedry that's in play.
Well, it's not insured that they're going to get any money because they set a precedent when
I'll tell you why they're going to get money. Because they just last year gave a white woman who got killed by an African Somali, and they sentenced his black ass to 12 years in jail. And this foreign invader, her family got $20 million.
Yeah, she's
so
white.
I know Floyd could get two or three.
She's white.
I know that for a fact.
But if you remember, they set a precedent last year when the young man got killed in his home by the cop when he was watching Netflix and eating some popcorn, when they said that they couldn't sue for damages. So then the lawyers went after the hotel. They went after everybody. So they set a precedent then. That was in Dallas. That was in Texas.
Oh, there's difference.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is that'll set a legal precedent. When that stuff is done in one area, it spreads, especially when they can get out of suing for damages or paying damages. It ain't necessarily going to mean that they're going to get any damages from that.
You got to have legislation, I think, in place in order to do that.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. You're absolutely right. Oh, they can fast-track legislation when it comes to you.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that ain't in place in Minnesota yet.
Yeah.
And
that could change in 2 weeks.
Hey, listen, that ain't going to happen.
Okay.
I'm not even going to entertain you on that one, bro, because I just know that that's what they will do. But in this situation, after giving the white woman $20 million and what's going on in Minnesota right now, that ain't going to fly, bro.
Okay.
Certain things that are flying other places, they'll set the precedent like they did in Dallas, and it'll move to other places. I agree with you totally. But certain places, you just can't now, out of the blue, implement that and get away with it. Nah, you can't.
Shouldn't we be thinking, though, what is it that we want put in place? And shouldn't we be discussing and developing what we want? I mean, especially if we're going to reside here and we're going to pay taxes here, and we're going to and on one side they're going to act like they're going to be upholding the law, on the other side they're going to make sure that we uphold the law. Shouldn't we, realizing that this is the challenge that we're dealing with, shouldn't we be really flushing out what is the policy? What is the law, the laws that are on the books that we want off and the laws we want on the books? I mean, shouldn't that be a part of our public informal conversation also?
Well, if you think that, I know these so-called Negro gatekeepers done thought it, and that just goes to show you where we at. Listen, man, when I first got into the movement, Alton Maddox, and when Perm Daddy was a little more militant, even though he was never really militant because he was an FBI agent, and C. Vernon Mason, Colin Moore, and other attorneys were basically Alton Maddox, he was talking about what you're talking about, what, 30 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So that just goes to show you where we evolved. I mean, if you could get Alton on your show,
some of us were talking about Alton.
From what I understand, after his warrior queen passed away, man, I think Alton's just gone through a lot, man, because that woman he had there was a hell of a woman, man. They don't make women like that no more. And she not only had his back, she kept him centered. As far as I'm concerned, the brother's just, in a sense, he's still lost, I think, without her, man. I just think him losing her, man, did a lot to him. You know what I mean? He's still a warrior. You know what I mean? But it took a lot out of him, man. You know, so it's hard, I think, for now, for people to even get him and to bring him on platforms like this, because it's no telling what truth he may tell now, because I really don't think he give a F no more. Mm. So I think in all truthfulness, people are scared of him. And I think that's one of the reasons why he probably ain't been on Carl's show. And I remember another queen sister, beautiful sister, Eutrice Leeds, hasn't had him on. And really, you know, people that I know that know him, they really haven't heard from him, but every now and then he'll drop something on Facebook. And, Alton, 30 years, man, he laid the groundwork. And I know for a fact he's disgusted by the Crumps and the rest of them, man, and the Johnsons.
Elliot, what I'm suggesting is that our conversation has to be, and you know, because we, like you said, Alton and them gave us, the information of how we should be thinking. Because he was saying you should be looking at it as warfare, looking at the, you know, that's how his approach, that we're engaged in legal warfare.
Hmm.
And the thing is, right now, and in warfare, you're always looking at things tactically and strategically. But you're talking about it in that manner. But what we're talking about, we in the sense of what the media projects, that we're talking from the perspective of being victims, you know, a victimization perspective.
Because
so we're looking,
we don't see ourselves at war.
Well,
how could you not be a victim? No, seriously, bro, really. How could you not be seen as a victim if you don't feel that you're at war with somebody? how is it that everybody that's basically on television is talking about you being passive Negro? How is it you have grown men on TV crying? I mean, at some point in time, you just have to say, I ain't going for it. See, I could go out there, bruh, and I could march, and I could do all that. But I always ask myself this. Why am I going to hurt my back and hurt my feet? For what? What am I going to do? Let me do this. Let me educate some young kid. Let me give some young kid advice. Let me make sure that my tenant got heat and hot water and that she not worried about paying me her portion of the rent. Let me worry about her having food to feed her son in this crisis. That's my concern. I, to be honest with you, I'm sorry to say it, but I really don't give a damn about a lot of these Negroes because they just insane. They ain't never going to take and put into context what's happening to them. And they ain't never going to really do anything in regards to fighting back. And you know something, to be honest with you, I really don't blame them. What they need to be doing is figuring out how to survive, come together with like-minded people like themselves, and build something in order so it can be sustained in this hellhole to whereas they could live a somewhat comfortable, dignified life. Because let me tell you, this is about to get worse, man. You know, this right here, what's going on in front of our eyes is minute to what's about to go down if things ain't handled properly in regards to this epidemic. I mean, all I'm going to say is this. If cities have to close down again in January, February of next year because of this pandemic, this country is going to be a wrap, because businesses are closing and people are going hungry already. And even with the so-called opening up that's happening, businesses are not going to reopen and people are going to still be going hungry. And you don't even have the leadership to do anything to try and make this right. So listen, this is just the beginning of a long, as they say, hot summer. This is going to be a crazy, crazy summer. Because, you know, when you have race soldiers like this cop who killed Floyd, who, surprisingly, this is the thing that got me, was the cop and Floyd knew each other, or indirectly knew each other. They seen one another. They worked at the same club. Now, the owner's trying to say that it was on swing shifts, so maybe they really didn't interact with one another, but I'm calling bullshit. You know what I'm saying? That's what it really is. But the point of the matter is, what's going to happen if the economy isn't somewhat up and running and the next issue happens? And it happens in a city that your boy ain't going to have no problems hurting black people. Because believe me, if it happened in Chicago, it happened in Detroit, it happened in New York, it happened in Atlanta, it happened in L.A., heads go get beat. Because he's embarrassed. He's embarrassed by what's going on in Minnesota, and he done already let out his dog whistles. So the thing is, the only reason he ain't doing this thing is too many white people involved. That's the only thing that's saving these Negroes, if we're going to be honest. Because he can't go in there beating up on white folks. Do you know how enraged that cocksucker is?
Come on, man. Come on. Come on.
Excuse me.
Come on, man. Come on. You got to control yourself now. I don't mind certain words. Come on, man.
I apologize, Elliot. I apologize. But do you know how mad he is that the police station was burnt down? Do you know what that do to law and order people to see that their police station is burnt down? The only time I ever seen anything like that happen in regards to the police, Elliot, is New York City, and who was it done by? You know it was done by, right? The Jew. The Jew, the only person I know that been able to go into a police station and basically overrun the station, tear stuff up, and ain't nothing happen. I ain't never seen it happen with no other group of people. So we're about a police station now that got burnt down? Come on, man. And you got a governor and a mayor who haven't done anything to quell it. And you done already had this guy on Twitter talking about what needs to be done, that he ready to sit in the National Guard. Man, listen, it's deeper than what we see.
But the way I'm interpreting, as you said, in the context of all you said, that there is a change afoot, and the Democratic Party has shown that they are bankrupt in leadership for the party. I mean, they all the candidates that they put out there, none of them was good enough to galvanize the white vote and still hold on to the black vote. Let me finish it. You know, my thought, whether it's not true or not, in the sense that this guy, what is his name? Jacob Fry. He's the other side of what was that? The one that they would like to have been the new face of the Democratic Party. Benachek, what is his name? Benachek, the Harvard gay.
Brother Judge. Right. Almost like you, better judge.
Right. Who had a problem, it came out that he had a problem with the black community as a national candidate. Now, this guy sets up, this provides for the black community. Now, there's been no discussion about it yet, but as you said, I mean, that's the cornerstone that he did something unprecedented. I mean, with a black police commissioner, they fell back and said and changed the narrative that fits for the Democratic Party, that you black life, and he made it clear in his point that black life and the FOP or the police union is not as important as black life, and a police building is not as important as if he would have went on the offensive, which the governor said he didn't agree with him, which meant that he would have went on the offensive, which what Trump said that he should have went on the offensive. But him being a young Democratic potential political operative in the Democratic Party with a majority in a white majority state, and from the numbers, a white majority state that's doing relatively well with a small black minority that has the same condition, you know, when looking at the numbers, I mean, the poverty rate in the districts, even though they're a small percentage of the county, of that Hoppington County, they still, their poverty rate is in one section, 55%, in another section, 17%, and only there's three areas that they're in. He becomes the new way of shifting the language of the party, and in shifting the language of the party, being able to set the party up, maybe not for this cycle, but for the next cycle, and you won't have a Biden, or as black people are saying, a choice between two evils. That's what that action in Minnesota seems to be doing, for that. And I still think that black folks shouldn't be fooled by it. I agree. You shouldn't be fooled by it, but the only way you're going to show you're not fooled by it is by you only self-governing yourself, or putting in place the mechanism of self-governing.
You know, I do agree with Jay when he mentioned about the, it would have been handled differently if this was a majority black city and you had a majority of people that was out there breaking windows and things like that being black, because you got a lot of whites. That's a majority white city. Some of them people might have been tired of being cooped up for 3 months.
Right.
So they ready to get out there and bustle. They ready to just, you know, get out and act a fool, period. So they couldn't wait for something like this to happen and use an opportunity to do what they're doing. But you see Trump sent out a tweet yesterday, I think, when he was talking about he put thugs in a capital letter.
Right.
Because a lot of these people, as soon as they see this type of thing, they automatically assume that it's our folks. And he said that he's ready to send the National Guard whenever the governor asks for it. Because he said mm-hmm. when the looting starts, the shooting starts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he wants to handle this differently. But, you know, his children is out there doing this. Their children are out there doing this. The majority of them. So, you know, I do agree with Jay about this burn. I was shocked when they let that police station burn and they evacuated the building.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's why I'm thinking it's a part of a broader political strategy, you know, in the sense of being able to let that happen, because any other place would have taken a offensive.
Oh, certainly.
You know, certainly. And because I agree with you, maybe because when you look at the audience, the demographics of the people out there protesting, and that would be that makes sense. Even the people who were looting, or the guy that they showed who was breaking in the windows and the other ones that were setting up for the fire, they were all white.
Mm-hmm.
But the language, the perception doesn't come across in the language of the media and the political operatives as if it was white. And the only way black people are coming, but the only white, and you see, is the in that political mechanism, the only white person, and he forced the governor to use the language, the mayor forced the governor to say about black life.
Well, you know, that's politically expedient for them to
do
that.
Right, and the thing is, do we look strategically, politically expedient for right now, or politically expediently for future political moves?
Listen.
And he's a Democrat.
Yeah, we got to read the tea leaves, Richard,
mm-hmm.
and see what's going on, understand their moves. And just like you said, this is war. You talked about Alton Maddox looking at this like war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But some of our people, a percentage of them, I don't know what greater percentage or how less, but some of our people don't feel as though that they're being warred upon. They look at this thing as being white allies in this thing. You know, we don't have no friends when it's dealing with this. And we got to realize this.
And it's funny because the invisible enemy that started, you know, what, 10 weeks ago, it was an invisible enemy that we were all going to war against, called the coronavirus.
Yeah,
everybody was supposed to be going to war against that. But
they had a public relations campaign going on. They had television stars, movie stars making commercials, you know, like a collage. We're all in this together. We're fighting together. You know, all of them saying the same thing.
And the thing was interesting. That's why, you know, when I opened up, you know, the thing was interesting. If you look at I don't believe a lot of people who were out there were wearing masks.
I don't think that. In fact, I think in that state they dropped the restrictions. I don't even really know whether they had real restrictions up there, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know whether they had the light of their stay home order. But I'm more than sure that they lifted their restrictions.
So that, you know, I mean, that was, you know, again, you know, here, that how quickly the public perception changes from a war against a virus to now the thing of race relations. Right?
That's always been the, for white folks, that's always been the elephant in the room.
Mm.
so-called race relations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Richard, come up to the end of another program, man. I think it'll be an interesting discussion on Sunday. I was unable to reach one of the authors that we had scheduled, but we'll have somebody stepping up that'll bring an interesting conversation to the Time for Awakening listening audience. We'll wrap about that a little later on. But okay. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
To save the children.